You're listening to the Growing Up Rock Podcast with your hosts, Stephen Michael and Sonny Hollywood Pooney.
So what's going on, Hollywood? We're here for another week of Growing Up Rock, and we got a fun one here tonight. What's happening with you, brother?
Just traveling, my friend. I am in sunny Fresno, California.
Fresno, California this week, and last week it was Italy, and the week before it was South Texas. I mean, good God, man, you're a traveling man.
Yeah, I'm on tour, or, you know, hitman, or whatever they say.
Hollywood on tour.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. Hey, we got a fun one here tonight because we've gotten a lot of really good feedback on the Crank It Up New Music Spotlight that we do in almost every episode that we do, except for some of the interview ones. But we wanted to kind of take a step back and say, well, you know, let's pick two or three bands that people may or may not have heard of, two or three bands or artists that you and I, we like, basically, or we're passionate about, and share those with people. And that's what we're going to do here tonight. You cool with that?
Yeah, we'd sneak them in every once in a while on the themed episodes. Yep. But a lot of the times we don't get to talk about these guys.
Yeah, and I mean, these artists, they may or may not be functioning today. I know that one of the artists that I'm going to feature are no longer together. They actually reformed in a different type of band, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But, you know, so it's just, it's music that we dig, or albums that we dug by artists that we think are worth a listen to. And so we want to turn people onto that and hopefully turn people onto some new music. Because Grown Up Rock, I mean, we talk about our memories, our musical memories, and growing up around rock and roll all the time. But sometimes there's things that we just want to share that may be new or may be old, but gives us an opportunity to share them and turn people on to some new music, right?
Yeah, a lot of the times what happens to me is, so I'll come across a band or be a band that I like, and then I jump down that rabbit hole to figure out if any of those four or five members have other stuff. And that leads you to other stuff. And that leads you to stuff they did in their garage. Yeah. And that leads you to stuff, right? So at times I have to stop and jump out of the rabbit hole, because you get too deep, you sit at home for 5 days.
Oh, completely. And I mean, it used to happen really organically, where you saw an ad in a magazine, or you maybe heard a song on AM or FM radio, or you saw a video or whatever. That used to be the way that it happened organically back in the day. Now, for me, more times than not, I'll either see them open up or play a club or open up for somebody, or I'll hear them on one of the streaming services, because a lot of times, you know, when I'm on the go, I'll stream playlists that they pick stuff out based on whatever I've been listening to, and that's how it works. So kind of cool.
Yeah, it's I was one of the bands I was going to pick. I ended up not picking them, but I started doing some research, and I'm like, man, I really love this song that they're doing right now. And it was this song called Maniac. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's pretty rocking. You know, it's got some keyboards, but that's cool.
Was it Michael Cimbello?
It totally was. It was a cover. I'm like, oh my God, this is Michael Cimbello's cover.
Oh, dude.
That's why I like it so much.
You weren't able to pick it out like almost immediately?
It was done well enough to where it sounded familiar, but you couldn't figure out exactly what it was, right? Wow. And then I'm like, well, why would this band that nobody's ever heard of do a cover of a hit? Like that doesn't make any sense, right? So
I heard a cover today that I want to make sure we get into the next episode of covers, undercovers, because I liked it a lot. Put that one aside and hopefully remember the next time we do another episode of Undercovers.
And then each of us got to see a concert, right? Because I just came back from Warrant Firehouse.
Yeah, tell me about that. How was that?
Man, Firehouse, I have not seen Firehouse since the early 90s. And to me, you know, Leverty is an underrated guitarist. You know, just one of those guys you don't hear about, because Firehouse, unfortunately, got ended up known for Love of a Lifetime and nothing else, seemed like. So because of that, the vocal right, and their melodies is really what makes the music, because everything else is usually so soft in the mix. So Firehouse gets on, and CJ says something to the mic, and he is loud, right? I mean, that mic was hot. And I'm like, oh, no, if he sounds like shit, this concert is going to suck ass.
Now, is CJ and Leverty are the two original guys in the band?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And they write all the stuff, right, really?
Sure.
I think Perry wrote some of it, but really CJ and Bill write it all. So he hits this first note. I'm like, oh, that was pretty good. And then they started the first song. I'm like, oh, my God, this is awesome. Because they started with Overnight Sensation. Dude, he hit every note. He was loud as hell. I wish guitars were louder. But he sounded so good that I was so happy.
Nice.
And he did this. I was telling people during All She Wrote, he hits this note and then he holds it and like cuts it in a third, holds it and then cuts it. And I'm like, damn, that takes control. Like he has his voice still.
Dude, they do Lover's Lane?
Oh, yeah.
Did they really? Did they do Shake and Tumble?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Then it would have been a good night for me.
Yeah, they did a really good job. And then Warren kills. I mean, Warren has the same energy they always have had. But something that I noticed, and I had not noticed it in the last two or three times I've seen Warren, and I don't know why, because it's the same, but the songs definitely have a different spin on them now, because Janie Lane was a real smooth singer.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, if it was Uncle Tom's Cabin, right? So. Right. You know, he's singing with this smooth voice, Uncle Tom's Cabin. But with Mason, he's got more of a yelp.
Yeah.
So it comes like a cabin, right? Like there's this yelp that he has. It sounds good, but it's not the same.
No, it's different. Mason attacks the song much differently than Janie used to do them. You know, Janie does have that smooth quality to his voice. And then, you know, he got a little bit away from that with the Doggy Dog record, but there's two sides to Janie Lane, I think, in his delivery as opposed to Mason. I think Mason's just full on rock and roll, right?
Yeah. So the music, instead of having a lot of feeling, is more aggressive now.
Yeah, that makes a little bit of sense.
But it's still good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
Set list the same?
Yeah. Almost the exact.
You just literally saw them like, what, a month ago or something, right?
July, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Set Loose is the same.
Okay. Are they working more of the newer material into the set or no?
No, not a lot. Yeah. Just one or two songs. You know, they did Louder, Harder, Faster. I think it was two new songs.
Yeah.
But, you know, the set list, you're not going to change it every day. I mean, that's just not who they are.
That's not who anybody is. They got too many songs they're known for now.
And then the other thing about Firehouse is because the music is so low in the mix and Leverty does a lot of fills, they really do need they need a rhythm guitar player. If they really want a full sound, they need a rhythm guitar player.
I don't know what it is. I just think really every band almost should have a rhythm guitar player now. It just sounds so much better live.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get it that some don't, and I would never tell Van Halen they need a rhythm guitar player, but, you know, there's just most of the time it just doesn't sound as good or as full without a second guitar playing underneath.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I went and saw LA Guns on, was it Monday night, I think, Monday or Tuesday night? The reunited LA Guns with Tracy Guns, which I know they've been reunited now for over a year and they put out an album and everything, but I have not seen this version of the band live ever. So I've never seen, let me think about that for a minute because I'm going back to the heyday. No, I'm 99.9% sure I've never seen LA Guns with Tracy and Phil. I've seen many different versions of LA Guns, all without Tracy Guns. So,
yeah, get this. So, first of all, you couldn't get away from them on the West Coast. They played all the time.
Yeah, of course.
We went on Fan Appreciation Night in 1990.
Yeah.
39 cents to get in.
Wow. And which version was this?
This was the original version.
The original version. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. This was the original version, and they had just released Cocked and Loaded, and they're on the back end of the tour.
Yeah.
And they played a club in San Francisco and the Stone.
Yeah.
And we couldn't believe it. It was 39 cents. The place was like overloaded with people. It was crazy.
Wow. That's awesome, man. Yeah. No, you know what? And I'll say this up front. I'm a casual LA Guns fan. I'm not a rabid LA Guns fan. They've just, I don't know, there's just something that never hit with me quite on all their music. I do like a lot of it. Cocked and Loaded is a fantastic record, and there's, you know, much, much more other stuff on some of the other albums that I like as well. But I consider myself sort of a casual fan, and the versions that I've seen has been meh. You know, I think I went and saw them at this Farm Rock thing, and they were one of many bands, and I kind of left midway through the set or watched it from way in the back of the room or something, because it was just meh. I just didn't really care. But that being said, this version with Tracy and Phil, I don't know what it was. I don't know whether it was the crowd. I don't know whether it was the smaller stage, the smaller club. I don't know. But there was a vibe and an energy coming off the stage that I thought made all the difference in the world with those two guys. And it was really, really, really good. I mean, the set list was great to begin with. It was a fantastic set list. There was a really good vibe with Tracy and Phil, and they sounded amazing. And the rest of the band is fantastic as well. And having Tracy and Phil back together again, it was really good. Sounded really good. Set list was great.
How did Phil sound?
Sounded good. Yeah, sounded good. You know, didn't hear any complaints. Watched the whole show. Played everything from an LA Guns perspective. They played everything that I would have wanted to hear. I'm trying to remember if they played Kiss My Love Goodbye, because I like that song. They may not have played that now that I think back, but Never Enough, probably my favorite LA Guns tune. They played that, so it was good. I played some other good ones. So yeah, it was a good concert.
Yeah, that's cool. And then who opened?
So that was 90% of the reason why I was there. I've talked about them in previous episodes. There's a band, Linum, and they're from Birmingham, Alabama, and they've been on the scene for many, many years now, probably since early 2000s. And they were pretty big in the Southeast. They've opened for just about everybody. And they were opening the show, and it was the only show that they were doing this year. And so I couldn't miss that, because they haven't played in so long. And the last time I saw them, which was many, many years ago, I've kind of gotten to become a fan of theirs through their music. I've gone down that rabbit hole, as you and I talked about, and picked up a bunch of their records, and they're really consistent with their music. They fall somewhere in between hard rock, a little bit of punk flair, and just, you know, straight ahead heavy metal, I guess. Just really good melodic tunes. Just a great band. And I couldn't remember kind of what they were like, because it's been so long since I've seen them, but they were fantastic live. I mean, tons of energy. They were set up in front of LA Guns, so they didn't have but about a penny worth of space. you know, but they still put on a fantastic show, and I was able to sit down with those guys for a good 25-30 minutes after the show and talk to them, which I've recorded for our listeners. And so we're going to use that to kick off this episode, as we spotlight some bands that maybe are lesser known. So I'm going to make Linum the spotlight to kick off this episode. We got a little Linum music involved in this bit that we're going to do. And I'm able to talk to Jacob and David from Linum. Jacob, of course, went out to California, and he's living out there now, and he's been part of Steven Adler's band at one point in time, and we talk a little bit about that, and we talk about some other stuff as well. So pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't really know Lynam that much. I think I told you this before, but I would buy, see, and I still do, buy CDs on Amazon, and then they'll give you a recommendation. If you like this, try this.
Yeah.
And Slave to the Machine came up one time, and I'm like, oh, that looks like a 80s band. So I bought it, listened to it.
Yeah.
Until yesterday, I thought they were an 80s band. I had no idea.
Yeah, they've been around. That record, man, that record, I love that record. Slave to the Machine is a really good, solid record.
Yeah, and the new stuff has kind of like a modern pop sound, so it doesn't surprise me that Jacob is out there writing pop songs for others.
Yep.
It's good stuff, though.
Yeah.
And the interview was good.
It's really aggressive. You know, they've got that pop sensibility, but they've also got a harder edge, and then there's a little bit of punk flair that comes through to it, and so hopefully I've mixed in a couple, two or three songs. Everything you hear in this interview, music-wise, is Lynam. You're hearing Lynam. And check them out. Go down the rabbit hole. There's a couple of EPs out there. Two records that I would recommend to people are Tragic City Symphony and Slave to the Machine. You know, you can try the EPs as well. Hell to Pay, and there's a new one out. I can't remember the name of it, but check them out. What else going on? Anything?
No. Let's cut in the interview here and come back with that other stuff.
All right. So we'll get to this interview. We'll come back and we'll spotlight the rest of those bands that Sonny and I were talking about. Here you go. Lynam.
This is David from the band Lynam.
This is Jacob from the band Lynam.
This is Mark from the band Lynam.
And you're listening to Steve and Sonny on the Grown Up Rock Podcast. Did we get it? Did we get it? We got it!
Grown Up.
Jacob and David, welcome to the Grown Up Rock Podcast. We're catching up with you guys outside the venue after the LA Guns and the Lynam concert. How was that for you guys?
In our tour bus. We hope you're enjoying your stay in here.
That's right.
I see the bass player for LA Guns, Mr. Johnny Martin, right there. He's searching for you, man.
He's talking to your bass player.
Yes, he is. See, the thing is Johnny and I played in Steven Adler's band, Adler, and David was also a part of it as well. He was Steven's drum tech. And Mark, our bass player, played the very last Adler show ever at M3. So it's kind of a big ancestral family reunion. It's pretty cool.
With LA Guns.
With LA Guns.
So you guys haven't been doing much lately because you went out to LA, is that right?
I moved out there a couple of years ago. I'm a full-time songwriter and do movie scores and stuff like that. But the band has never broken up. We never will break up until one of us dies, and then we'll just replace whoever dies. Yeah, and keep it going.
All we need is 5 minutes notice. We tell each other, look, if you can't make the gig, give us 5 minutes. We'll get somebody up here that can do it.
Did you guys all grow up together?
No.
You would think.
Yeah, you would think so. There's a big age difference between the bass player and us. So no, we didn't grow up. We've known each other for so long now because we've been together as a band for 17 years.
Right. We're always in the way, no matter whether we're recording or not recording.
I can tell you this. I've never done a podcast while we go down the road. That's
This is a first.
We're going to Hollywood, man. See you later.
Amazing.
Ever since he moved to L.A., we haven't been able to play much, and we miss being able to play. As you could tell from tonight, we had a great time.
Did all you guys move to L.A.?
No.
Okay.
I moved to L.A. We haven't even seen each other in 10 months. Our last show was New Year's Eve, and we haven't even seen each other in 10 months. So what you saw tonight was no rehearsal, no anything. It was just us.
We talk about what songs we're playing. We didn't say first song is going to be this.
We just flew in and did the gig.
Yeah. We've never operated on a set list the entire time we've been a band. So we always look at the crowd and judge who's there, who's seen us before. If there's a bunch of people that haven't seen us before, then we know to go with our strong hitters. And if we see people in the crowd that know our music, like the deep cuts, we'll throw some of those in. So we just always judge it by who's in front of us.
Yeah, we're very judgy people.
How did you guys end up coming together then?
So,
true story. Have you heard of Christian Mingle, Doug? No.
Christian.
So, true story, Mark was playing in another band, and David and I both happened to be at a show, and that's where we met.
Uh-huh.
And David had a show coming up, and he needed a singer, and asked me to come sing, and I did. And
we met at a show he was playing.
That's what I just said.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Stick with us here. We got trains, we got vans moving down, we got LA Gun people.
Planes, trains, and automobiles. Yeah, so we were watching Mark, the bass player, at a show, and we met, and David had a show that he needed a singer, so he invited me to come sing, and the show went really well. There were four of us, and David's sales pitch to me was, we get $100, and I'm like thinking, oh, cool, so we just split it four ways, like $25 a piece, and he goes, no, dude, like $100 a man. And I was like, whoa, that's like rich people money.
He just got dropped by a label with his old band, and he was like, oh, we get to take home $100 a piece? How many gigs can I do with you?
Yeah, because originally, Jacob, you had this band that was signed to a record label, Mars Electric,
right? Yeah.
And that was your first foray into the record industry and that whole thing. And
it was. We
first experience getting dropped, but certainly not your last.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, it was really interesting because I was a poor kid, grew up in Tarrant, didn't have any money, anything. So when Mars Electric got a record deal, we actually got a $1 million record deal, and it made, you know, the front page of the Birmingham Weekly and the newspaper and stuff like that. But what people don't realize is when you get a $1 million record deal, that doesn't mean they give you $1 million. It means it's spread out over the course of five or six albums if they don't drop you. And you don't get any of that,
which
really.
Because at his age, he'd be dead if you gave him $1 million then. Who has the responsibility to handle $1 million?
Yeah, so really, we bought a van and trailer and equipment and cases for the equipment, everything else. That pretty much ate up the first advance. And then, of course, spending tons of money on recording the record and everything else. So my point is even in Mars Electric, there wasn't a ton of money. So after the band broke up and I met David, $100 a gig sounded great. Hey, can we play 7 gigs? can we play every night of the week? And so basically that's how we came about. And we were playing college frat parties, we were playing clubs, we were playing anywhere that would have us. And it was a money thing, and we had so much fun doing it. It's like, well, man, let's write too. Let's do records. Let's do this. And so that's what we did.
You made a living essentially playing cover tunes like a lot of bands.
It was our vehicle to give people our original music.
Right, yeah.
You could go down to the empty club and play every weekend to nobody and build your audience over the course of 10 years. Or you could have a jump start like we did. In 2 years, we had a huge fan base that all knew our songs.
And the thing is, it's like a program director in Birmingham for an old radio station called 107.7 The X. His name was Dave Rossi, and he is the guy that discovered Hootie and the Blowfish. And he was telling me that's Hootie was just a cover band, you know, they played all the fraternities and sororities and stuff like that. And he said they only had 10 original songs when they got signed to Atlantic, and that was their first album, Cracked Your View, you know. And then he went on to talk about how the Beatles were a cover band playing 5 sets a night, how Van Halen was a cover band playing 4 sets a night at Gazzari's. And I was like, you know what, that's awesome, because not only are you playing all these hit songs, so you learn the anatomy of a hit song, you learn how to write a hit song, and you just build up your stage presence and everything else. And like Malcolm Gladwell says, you know, the 10,000 hour rule, if it takes 10,000 hours to be good at anything, well, we've got a 10 million hours at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's how bands did it back then. I mean, you were on the road, you were a circuit band, you played every night, you played four sets a night, and so, yeah, you honed your chops.
When it came down to doing an original show for 45 minutes, you're like, Jesus, we could do this.
Yeah, all night long,
yeah, 14
right?
shows a week.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way we were. We told any manager that signed us, we said, listen, all these other bands complaining about two nights on, one night off. Not us. You can get us three gigs a day for playing an hour.
And you made money, which helped fund all the other things for the band, you know, so.
It was really amazing because we made a lot of money doing it.
Yeah, and we didn't just get by. We did very well for it. We all paid for our houses with it.
And the screwy thing for me is Lineham came onto my radar. I think I saw you open up for Cinderella.
Oh, yeah. And that's when you first heard
at Wild Bill's. That's when I first saw Lineham. Then I went down the rabbit hole and started digging into records and, you know, Slave to the Machine. And, you know, I got the latest EP, Halfway to Hell,
right.
And Tragic City Symphony. So I went down that rabbit hole and I said, man, this is really good shit. This band's awesome. And then for some reason, I'm like, Lineham's playing around the corner from my house at the sports bar. I'm like, holy shit. What are these guys playing here for? I'm going to see the show. And I walk in, and sure enough, there's Lineham. But you guys are playing cover songs. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Well, I want to hear like this or this, you know?
That happened a whole lot. Like, if you looked at our schedule, and this is no exaggeration, because I will never forget this, looking at our schedule on our website, we got the call to, like we would go play, open up for big national acts and stuff like that, and then we'd also play our college shows and stuff. I'll never forget looking at our schedule one time, and it was BJCC opening for Godsmack, and the very next night it said Big Time Wings, Clanton, Alabama. So we went from a 20,000-seat arena to a wing joint.
Yeah, we played 200 one night and then 30,000 the next. Like, it was crazy.
But it probably didn't matter to you guys, because at the end of the night you were still playing music.
Hours on stage.
Yeah, music in front of people, right? Whether it's 10 people or 1,000 people.
Yeah, we just love playing and everything. And one of the things that we always did, like I said, growing up, didn't have any money. So one thing that we've always done is, if my mom was able to bum money from my granddad so we could get concert tickets to go see a show, we would never be able to get a t-shirt or a CD or anything like that, because the merch was so expensive. My first concert was Beastie Boys. The posters were $6. So I got a $6 poster. I couldn't get a, you know, $20 shirt. But one thing that Lineham's always done is, from we tell everybody every night, it's pay whatever you want. So if a kid only has a buck or whatever, we'll still make sure that he goes away with a CD. If they have $5, we'll make sure they go away with a shirt, CD, something like that. So
that's awesome.
It's just about the playing every night, being on stage, whether it's originals, covers, no matter what it is. It's just playing music and then getting our CDs in the hands of people and spreading our music around.
So you mentioned Beastie Boys being your first.
Both of our first concerts.
Both of your first concert. Really?
We were at the same show, didn't know each other until 20 years
later. So what was your first rock concert?
I thought that was rock to me. It felt like it. Like, when I was there, I thought it was a rock.
So the band that opened up for the Beastie Boys was a band called Murphy's Law and another band called Fishbone. So there were two rock shows. But my first rock concert was Whitesnake. My mom took me. My mom wanted to have sex with David Coverdale. So we went to the show. She unfortunately was not chosen from the audience to be a lucky recipient.
She wore the wrong dress.
Murphy's Law from New York, the punk band Murphy's Law?
Yeah, that's them.
That's a trip.
I think my first rock concert probably was Poison, I think. Yeah.
Poison and David Lee Roth.
Vanilla Ice or something terrible like that. But, I mean, I've had a lot of bad ones in between.
So we like to turn listeners on to music, new music, and Lineham isn't in everyday playlist, but we want to make sure that people hear what we hear in you guys. So pick a song off of Tragic City Symphony
to
play.
That's our favorite CD.
Pick one to play.
Heartbreaker Loaded Gun.
Heartbreaker Loaded Gun. Here you go. We'll be right back. right, so you guys told us about your first concert. Some of the things we like to do on Growing Up Rock is what were the first rock albums you guys purchased?
First rock album that I ever got. I got two albums in one day from Turtles Records and Tapes, and I got Slippery When Wet and Girls, Girls, Girls. My granddad got me both the records. It was sometime around Christmas, so that was pretty cool.
My first CD, God, it's so I've saved by my first because my second one was terrible. First was the Joshua Tree, you two.
Uh-huh.
Second, Salt and Pepper. No, J.J. Fad. Even worse, J.J. Fad.
Well, the ones that I named are the first two that I actually bought. The first album that I actually had, my mom got me Metal Health. Quite right.
Really? That, I think that was a lot of
kids.
We were
both a member of BMG and Columbia House. We used it.
And Styx Kilroy was here. I had that because of Mr. Roboto.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mark's back there sleeping. How about your first record?
Kiss, Rock and Roll Over.
Rock and Roll Over for Kiss. What turned you guys on to music? What flipped the switch for you guys and said, hey, I want to do this for a career? Was there a moment?
The moment you get fired from your day job and you're playing music.
Yeah.
And it hits you, I'm a full-time musician.
Look at me. When I was born a full-time musician.
Something you didn't just decide all of a sudden to play drums. Most of us are music fans, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I grew up watching MTV.
Yeah.
I mean MTV Pearl Jam's what made me go get a drum set. But I grew up with it during the 80s.
In the
90s? No, but when I picked out my first drum set was when Pearl Jam was huge.
And yeah.
They were the reason I started playing drums.
Okay. Jacob?
I started playing since I was a little kid. Like I was always playing piano before I could even sit up hardly. My mom would sit me at an old upright piano at my granddad's house, and I would just bang on it before I could even play anything. And I was just obsessed with it. But it was Headbangers Ball, Motley Crue. First time
MTV generation.
Yeah, the first time I ever saw Nikki Sixx and those guys, I was just like obsessed. I just thought it was amazing.
They're like superheroes when you're a kid.
Yeah,
they are. And Poison was one of my favorite bands. It's like I just thought they were so cool. And the thing is when you watched all the videos, like I said, I grew up so poor, didn't have anything. It's like they had everything. They had the fast cars, they had all the things that rappers have in their videos today. That's, you know, that's what the 80s dudes had.
Right.
They had all that stuff, the girls, the
if we can everything. Only go back.
Yeah, for sure.
So how did you end up with Steven Adler?
Through the death of Janie Lane, I think.
Right? Yeah, so Janie Lane from Warrant was a really close friend of ours. And
how did that friendship come about?
MySpace.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a trip.
He found
this trip.
Yeah, he found Lynam somehow on MySpace. He was just listening to different bands, and he reached out, and I thought it was a joke, and it said, hey, I want to write with you immediately, call me. And there was a cell phone number, and it was a Janie Lane account, and I was a huge Warrant fan, and I just kind of laughed it off.
As would you if you got that one.
No shit. Yeah. This is an actual true story.
Oh,
yeah. That is a trip.
And then I wrote back something like, yeah, right. And he goes, no, I want to work with you. I want to write. I think you guys are amazing. You guys are, you know, the best new band that I've heard in 10 years. So I called the 818 area code number or whatever. And as soon as he picked up the phone, I knew it was him because I've heard so many interviews with him over the years. And I was like, wow. And he goes, so I'm going to fly to Birmingham next week. And he did. He flew to Birmingham, stayed at my house, went out on the road with us, with Lynam.
He'd be playing a cover show. And he'd be like, I'm going to stay in the bus. I don't want to get mobbed by people. And we go, okay, well, we'll be back when we get done playing. And he'd just get a wild hair up his ass and get off the bus and come in. And we had seen him come in, and we'd go into Down Boys. Mm-hmm. And without going, ladies and gentlemen, it's Janie. We wouldn't say a word. He'd just walk up on stage, grab the mic, sing Down Boys, put it back on the mic stand, walk off stage and walk in. While he's singing, people are looking at their phone going, that's definitely him. That's definitely him. And never acknowledged it, just kept singing, went on to the next song. What's crazy about our music is we started noticing, like when we played with Cinderella, Tom came up and said, hey guys, Slave to the Machine's one of my favorite albums. My family. Yeah. This started happening repeatedly, and we started going, well, I guess our music kind of has that 80s, you know, metal sound.
Holy, Slave to the Machine was,
right.
If Slave to the Machine would have come out in 86, 87, that record would have been huge.
Right.
I have no doubt about it.
He asked Tom on a whim. He goes, we're recording Tragic City Symphony right now. We have a song in there. Would you mind doing a solo? Meaning, can we send the stuff to you and you do it up in Nashville? He goes, yeah, I'll come down Tuesday. I'll drive down to Birmingham. We go, drive to Birmingham? No, 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 we'll send it. He goes, no, I want to see where y'all record. I like the mix in that album. I may start recording there. Sure enough, he recorded his album where we recorded it, and he did that solo for us. It's a song called Enemy on Tragic.
Yeah.
That's Tom Kiefer playing slide on it.
Yeah, he brought a $350,000 1959 Les Paul, threw it in his trunk, and brought an old Marshall head.
Well, we talked about it. Should we go ahead and play it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Why not? Let's play Enemy.
Hey, the interesting fact about the song is Tom Kiefer's on it, but all the gang vocals, all the background vocals is the band Hinder. So it's Tom Kiefer and Hinder, so it's pretty cool.
Never was a single.
Sweet. Let's play it. Tragic City Symphony.
It's a tongue twister. You got to take a run and start at it.
Where does the title come from?
Magic City is our hometown.
Yeah.
So we just call it Tragic City.
Okay.
Symphony, since it's an album.
Because it's a music. Because it's a music.
To tell you what it, yeah, that's the true story, and it's so boring. I wish we could come up with something
collectively
better.
Collectively, that's your favorite record, huh?
Yeah. The production on it and songs, we think, was the pinnacle of like just where our career was as far as music goes. Slave to the Machine, obviously close second. All of our fans think Slave to the Machine's way better.
Yeah, I think Slave to the Machine
is more raw. It's
more,
not as polished.
It's more raw, and it's more in my wheelhouse as far as hard rock goes, although I like a lot of stuff off of Tragic City mm-hmm. Symphony. So those two records are my favorite. The EP you put out, Halfway to Hell, had some good stuff on it as well. So, I mean, you guys are pretty consistent with the stuff you do. I like your band a lot.
Thank you.
I mean, that's why I'm here. I wasn't planning on coming to the show, but when Scully added you guys to the bill, I was like, okay, these guys haven't been around in forever. I need to catch
up. It's expensive to get us. I told Scully, we got to fly Jacob in for this. Are you sure? He goes, I'll run it up the flagpole. And he came back and said, we'll do it. And I was like, holy shit. Well, this will be our only show this year. So
yeah. So you come in, you do the show, you fly back home to Los Angeles, and everybody still lives in, you two still live in Birmingham, and go on about
your... We play every weekend. He just writes.
Yeah.
And we're in a club or wedding or whatever every weekend. Playing.
Yeah, they're in some great bands. Mark plays with a great band called Spunk Monkeys, and then they play with some of the members of that band, and they do a band called Danger City. And David is probably one of the most literally desirable drummers out there, because like everybody hires him, like every single band hires him constantly. Yeah. So he's playing with somebody. He'll be with Damon Johnson one day, Molly Ringwald's the next day, Velcro Pygmies the next day, U.S. like. It's just, he's an amazing drummer. So,
well, you guys are exciting live. It's been so long since I saw you. I don't think I necessarily remembered how good you were live.
Thank
and when I came and saw you guys, I was like, holy shit, these guys are really, really good.
We're making up, we're only three people on stage, so you have to do a lot of energy.
So let's talk about that, because I think when I saw you, it was three piece. But then everywhere I kind of look, it's a four-piece.
Well, when Adler ended, Stephen kept canceling tours last minute. Mm-hmm. We were like, enough. Let's mm-hmm. just... It left Lonnie that was in Adler.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny went to L.A. Guns.
Mm-hmm.
And Lonnie was just kind of left holding the bag. And we're like, look, we're booking shows. We can book shows. And you're not going to make a lot of money, but we're a 20-year band. We can get you going home with money after we fly everybody in. So he played with us for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know if the money wasn't good enough or what. He just decided that he was ready to stop touring.
Yeah, it wasn't a money thing. It was just, he is really busy back in L.A. too, writing songs and doing stuff for, like, National Geographic television and stuff like that. He does, like, the background music for all those really big shows on that stuff. So it's really cool.
He's married to daughter, so.
That's a trick.
He don't need us.
Yeah. Nah, he's awesome. She's awesome. And man, I just realized I never answered your question about how I ended up with Adler. But it was through Janie. When Janie passed away, I went to L.A. to his memorial, and I was already out there writing. I've been writing in the pop world for years. When I was at his memorial, that's where I met Stephen and them.
Yeah.
I actually met Lonnie, and then Stephen and Lonnie came to my hotel the next day, and Stephen really loved Lynam and the songs and all that other stuff. And he was like, I'm the only original member of Guns N' Roses that has never done a record. Izzy had the Juju Hounds, Duff has Loaded, Slash has, you know, the Conspirators. Axl never stopped doing Guns N' Roses. He said, I've done Adler's Appetite, but I don't have a record. And I really, really want to do this because we're going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in April and all that. So that's how that came about. And yeah, it was an awesome time. My condition was, I had several conditions, you know, stay straight. And you know, in my band, Lynam, they're my brothers. They come along too, you know, whatever we do. And that was that.
So the experience overall was good for you?
Mm-hmm. We got to see parts of the world we wouldn't have seen just playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we got to see Peru. We got to see Japan. We got to see so many different places.
That's
cool.
Got
to play with Kiss. I mean, all that stuff was just really, really cool.
So what's next for Lynam? Is there a future for Lynam?
There is.
Yeah, we just don't know.
We
a lot of bands have a good answer for that. We just don't know. We just play it by ear, you know.
Okay.
We have fun when we play.
Yeah.
And we cherry pick good gigs.
Yeah.
Fun gigs like this.
But you are cherry picking gigs.
Yeah.
So this is
you
the
have
one.
To. I mean, we can't go play, you know, $200 gigs. And
do you guys ever go out to LA and meet up with him and play?
Yeah, we almost sold out the Whiskey. We played there with Gus G, and we had almost sold it out.
Because I saw Scully's doing something for NAMM show in January with a band from here, like a Van Halen tribute band at
the
Whiskey.
Yeah, he said he told me
something.
That. We need to play the Whiskey again. After we had that great night there, I don't know why we didn't immediately book a show 10 months out.
All right.
We should. Because we're dumb.
Yeah. We're lazy. unmotivated.
Well, that's awesome, man. I don't want to keep you guys all night. I can't believe that we ended up getting this interview in because it was just a long night.
Yeah, we won't go through the night, but just it took a lot to get it done.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks again.
Thank you, man.
Thanks again.
Thanks for having us, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
See ya.
See ya.
Yeah, it's kind of refreshing. No ego, hardworking, blue collar. I love the way they handle merch. Dude, that is awesome.
Isn't that a great idea?
Because he's not wrong. There was times I went to a show and I didn't have any money to buy a shirt and I would have loved to buy one.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. I mean, I understand that, you know, bands sell merch to make money, but I think that that's a cool idea. And I think that, you know, I think he's really in touch with the fact he pointed out us several times, right, that he grew up without any money. So, you know, it's all about reconnecting with some of those and being true to who you are and bringing it forward. And I think that that's an awesome idea. And, you know, listen, I respect any band, whether I like the music or don't like the music. I respect any band that gets out there and works hard. And back in the day, that's what bands did. They would play four sets a night of cover songs and feed people an original here or original there. And, you know, they do it for six nights a week or whatever. And you heard them talk about, look, we made a pretty good living at this at one point in time, enough to buy houses and stuff. And I think that that's, you know, I mean, that's the case with a lot of those bands that did that. And I know firsthand, I was, had many, many friends that did that for a long time that would just, you know, go from city to city and do a circuit and play four sets a night. And, that was it.
Yeah. That's, refreshing. And I liked all the songs you played. I got to get into the rabbit hole with them because I enjoy their music.
Yeah, I think there's several songs that you would enjoy just knowing, you know, your personal taste and everything. So definitely, I mean, the great thing is it's not a ridiculously deep rabbit hole. There's definitely, like I said, the two albums to start with and then hit up the two EPs and you're pretty much there. And so that's it. But that was Lynam. That was my first pick and we're off and running. So What do you want to share with the listeners that they may or may not have heard?
All right. So the first band I want to talk about, and you know, you should know by now that my musical library really runs from Motown to European power metal. I don't really get into the Cookie Monster vocals, I guess. Not much of a country fan, a little bit of classical, right? But anything in between, I'll give it a shot. And one of the bands that I came across a few years ago was a band called Firewind. They are a Greek power metal band, and you won't know him by his name, but you know the guitarist. His name is Konstantinos Karmatridos, better known as Gus G. So this is Gus G's band. Initially was put together because he was trying to put some demo songs together. So in 1998, he's trying to, you know, get a record deal, put some guys together, and goes and puts a demo together. And that demo does okay. They get signed. They were having a hard time finding a singer. They bounced back and forth a little bit. And then the real band really started about 2001. They have 8 studio albums. They've had 7 different singers in the last 20 years. So there's people bouncing out of in and out of this band. And honestly, I don't blame them, because Gus G spent 8 years with Ozzy, right? So the guys, you know, it wasn't his number one band for 8 years. It is now, but it wasn't before. And Gus G's released some solo stuff too. So Greek power metal is exactly as it sounds. It's got keyboards, it's got heavy guitar, it's got incredible melody, and some great vocals. So give this song a shot. It is called Head Up High. We'll be right back.
right on. So did you decide to jump down this Gus G rabbit hole because isn't he going to be on our cruise?
Oh, yeah, he is on the he is going to be on our cruise. But I went down this rabbit hole like probably about 5 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. When I found out that he was going to be with Ozzy. So it's actually a little bit longer than 5 years ago. I just wanted to know who the guy was because Ozzy doesn't usually just pick up anybody. Like he has some taste. Right. And if he's and people said that Gus G was already a known entity and I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know anything about him either. I got the one Ozzy record with him, which was Scream. He only did the one Ozzy record, right?
That's right.
You know, and so I just never really felt the need to seek him out. There was the other guy that I kind of missed was Joe Holmes. I never really seeked him out either. And he's, you know, done a lot of stuff outside of the Ozzy camp as well. It's just I kind of miss those two guys for whatever reason. But I mean, I thought Scream was okay. There was some good stuff on Scream.
Yeah, and that song we just played, right? He rips on the solo. The song sounds a little Dio-ish, a little Iron Maiden, right? And that doesn't surprise us because, you know, there's some European flavor there. And, you know, if you don't really know Firewind and you don't know where to start because they got a lot of albums.
Yeah.
I would start with The Premonition that came out in 2008. I think you'll enjoy that album if you want to try it out.
That's cool. I will definitely check it out. There's one thing for sure. If they're a guitar player in Ozzy's band, they can play guitar. There's no shit about that, right?
That's right.
I never even have to hear the Ozzy record. It's like, this guy's playing guitar for Ozzy. Okay, well, he's great then.
Yeah, you have to assume that with a Dio guitarist. You have to assume that with an Alice Cooper guitarist. Like,
Coverdale.
These guys don't pick up chumps.
Yeah, Coverdale, same thing. That's yeah. Another one. Yeah, that's the old school, the old guard. They do not pick up slouch musicians, really. And that really, yes, we say guitar, but really it goes for almost any instrument in their bands.
Yeah,
those,
no doubt.
Those old school metal guys, they do not get slouch players. So awesome. Well, on to mine. I am 99.9% sure that nobody probably knows too much about this band. Have you ever heard of this next band that I'm going to talk about?
No, not until you put it on the list and I saw it today.
There you go. So I am going to share a band called Million Dollar Reload. This band is no longer in existence. I think they broke up around 2015, if I'm not mistaken. So they were formed in 2006 in Northern Ireland, and they came onto my radar with a record called Sinner's Saint. And I listened to the record and I was like, holy shit, I like this record. So I went ahead and picked up the record, and the more I listened to it, the more I just loved it. I thought it was a great, solid record. I'm always amazed. I don't know why, especially nowadays. I'm always amazed when I get a record and I think it's really great, but like you never hear of the band. And nowadays that's kind of normal, I think, but it always just kind of amazes me. I'm like, why is nobody talking about this band, or why is nobody else picked up this record, or whatever the situation is. And this band has had a lot of turbulence. So it's interesting, right? Because you just heard this conversation that I did with Lynam, right? And you heard about the whole Adler-Lynam connection in that interview, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I picked up this band, I put them on my list for tonight. You know, I had to go out and do a little bit of research because I really didn't know a whole lot about the band. I knew that they were no longer a band. I knew they had broken up. I knew they had two or three records out, and they were good, solid records, and I liked them, and that's pretty much as I knew about them. I didn't know anything else about them. But before starting to record their debut album, Million Dollar Reload were recruited, minus the drummer, by Steven Adler of Guns N' Roses as his backing band in his post-Guns N' Roses career playing under Adler's Appetite. How messed up is that?
Wow. Okay.
Talk about a coincidence. I mean, because I had no idea about that. So the band performed with Adler in Ireland after he had fired his own band during the European leg of their 2006 tour. This proved to be the catalyst for Million Dollar Reload to enter the studio speedily and begin the recording process for their debut album. So then this band goes on, and they get signed by Frontiers Records. And in 2014, before they put out a record on Frontiers, they have a fight with Frontiers because Frontiers refuses to put out this live record that they had recorded. And so basically Million Dollar Reload says, in the best career move ever, hey, Frontiers, piss off. We're going to go put this record out on our own. So Frontiers, of course, said, are you now? Well, that's good. You're dropped.
Nice.
So they did. They released a live album on their own label. They got dropped by Frontiers in 2014. And eventually, a year later, they kind of disbanded, broke up, whatever the deal is. But they became a new band. And who in this new band, I don't know, is left over from Million Dollar Reload, but they've got a new band called Blackwater Conspiracy. And Blackwater Conspiracy, I went out and checked out the record because I've never heard of it, didn't know much about it. It's much bluesier. It's still rock and roll, not near as raw rock as what Million Dollar Reload is. But still rock and roll, just much more bluesy, much more polished sounding. So, you know, there might be some folks that would dig Blackwater Conspiracy out there. But I'm going to play this song off the Sinner's Saint record, Million Dollar Reload. And like I said, it's the record is a solid record. And any of those two or three records that you want it to pick up from Million Dollar Reload, I think you would be okay picking up. But this is a song called Bullets in the Sky.
Yeah.
when I first heard the song, so I was watching the video as I was listening to the song, I picked up two things. One, the singer, dude, he could be an AC/DC.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? So I don't know why they're messing with anybody else. Go hire that guy. And the second, the two guitarists must be Kiss fans because one's playing a Sunburst Les Paul and the other one's playing an Ibanez Iceman.
Oh, really?
That's so funny. They must be Kiss fans.
That's funny. I've never even seen the band. That's the other thing. The difference between you and I is you go and do your research on YouTube a lot of times. And for whatever reason, I don't. I just Spotify it most of the time, or it's already in my library and I just pick it out of my library. But I probably should get better at going and trying to see some of these videos so I can see what some of these guys actually represent live.
Yeah, I'm always interested to see if there is a video out there just so you can kind of put a name to a face kind of thing. That's the only reason.
Yeah, no doubt. But do you enjoy that song at all or no?
Oh, I thought it was a good song.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really good song.
Cool.
And his voice is very intriguing, very listenable.
Yeah. It's a good solid rock record for sure. So yeah. $1 Million Reload, Sinner's Saint.
All right. So the next guy I want to talk about, his name is Gary Shutt. Nobody knows this guy. And let me tell you some stuff about him. So his dad was a professional Catskills jazz drummer. This guy started on drums first. Today he's recognized as a songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, which I've seen him play guitar, bass, and drums. He's a producer. He makes his own videos. He's a gun for hire. He's a studio guy. And he's toured with, get this list, Neil Sean, Robert Zander, Eric Martin, Menichetti, Jolynn Turner, Bobby Kimball, Jeff Scott Soto, Doug Aldrich, Joe Travers, Brian Tichy. And the names just go on and on and on. Jeff Martin from Racer X. The guy is completely unknown. He is a DIY guy, so he basically plays everything on the albums and puts it out on his own label. He has his own record label. He has 19 albums right now, 5 DVDs. The guy's been in Panic Fire, Diary of an Ozman, Metalheads, E19. He's released stuff under his own name, Gary Shutt. He's been in The Pink and Palisade. Been around since, I would say, early 90s. Graduated from the Berklee College of Music, was a teacher there, taught guitar and bass, and nobody knows who the hell the guy is. Lives in Tampa, Florida. He's got his own website if you want to check him out. Like his band Panic Fire, so check this out. Today, the band Panic Fire is a cover band, so they play as a cover band once a week. Then they play as an original band once a week, and then they are the backing band for an Ozzy tribute band called Diary of an Ozman. So they'll play 3 times a week in 3 different ways. So if you want to talk about trying to figure out how to make ends meet and make a couple of dollars, I'm assuming you haven't heard of this guy.
Well, you've played him on our show before.
Yeah, I think I picked a song from him before. Yeah.
That's where I've heard of him from.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I've no clue about this guy.
Very talented. The song I want to play for you is called Invisible, and it's off an album called Moving Parts. So check this out.
Invisible, dying on the weekend, selling can find me on the edge of the blade. I'm always getting by. I'm standing back of the line. 1,000 miles from somewhere. A song that's never known. A voice that needs a home. I'm in there. A little fool without a clue. 1,000 miles from somewhere. A song that's never known. A voice that needs a home. I'm invisible. Dying on the weekend. Selling my soul again. A pocket full of change. I'm invisible. A million miles from somewhere. A song you'll never know. A voice without a home. I'm invisible to you. Ow, 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 ow.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a good song, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good song. Yeah, listen, this guy's got talent. I think I liked the last thing you played from him. And I don't remember what episode that was on.
I can't remember either. He's done some stuff where Jeff's done the vocal.
Yeah.
So we probably picked something off of that. There's a really cool video of him, and I've posted it before. He's got 4 squares on the video, and he's doing Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
And he's doing all 4 parts. So he's singing, he's playing piano, guitar, and bass. And then when all the parts come in, since he's doing all the parts, all 4 little sections are singing. It's really cool. You got to check it out. It's on YouTube.
Well, why don't you share that video on our Facebook page?
I can do that.
There you go. What's this guy look like? Is he young, old?
Yeah, I would say, no, he's probably in his, I would say, late 40s. You know, regular looking guy.
Is he a long hair or does he look like a musician?
He doesn't really, he's kind of got the Nelson hair now.
Yeah.
You know, the little bob cut kind of thing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know he's a musician if you walk by him. Okay. That's for sure.
No tattoos, no earrings, nothing like that.
A little bit, but he's probably wearing skater shoes and jeans and you wouldn't know the difference.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Throw that video up on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I can do that.
At Growing Up Rock.
Shameless plug.
There's your plug. Speaking of plugs, Samantha.
Please make sure you subscribe to our podcast, Growing Up Rock, and leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a like and leave us a comment on Facebook at Growing Up Rock.
All right. Just like Samantha said, subscribe to the podcast. You can help us out by going to Amazon and doing your shopping at Amazon through our link on our website at grownuprock.com. Doesn't cost you a penny more, but you help us out because we get a few pennies for everything that you buy through Amazon using our link. So it's transparent to you, but it helps us out, helps us keep going. And that's a good thing because we're bringing rock and roll to the masses. Ain't that right there, Hollywood?
That's right. You can order an orange. You can order K-cups. You can order a sock.
Can you order orange K-cups?
You can order orange K-cups that smell like socks. Amazon sells everything.
I got the list of everything that's been bought right here. Let's see. There's been a tube sock, some tinfoil, one cucumber, a six-pack of Mountain Dew, some trousers, some granny panties, and this plant, and one lampshade, and this thermos. This has all been bought. And one Jeff Scott Soto CD.
Yeah. Funny.
Oh, God. All right. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this this spotlight. Hopefully we're turning you on to some new music that you may or may not have heard.
You're not going to do your second one?
Yeah, of course I am, man. I'm getting there. Okay. Let me talk to the people. I was just wondering. Can I talk to the people? Please. Yes.
Sorry, people.
Yes, I am getting to my last song. I'm going to get to my last pick or my last band. And I should say, listen, we could dig through our catalog and probably find a ton of bands that we're passionate about that maybe you guys have heard of, maybe you haven't heard of. There's tons of new music being made today that's great as well. So it's not just a thing of a past, but get out there and check it out. If we get good response to this episode, we'll make sure we do another one. You know, we'll try to space it out. Of course, we're not going to do it next week. We got tons of stuff to share with you guys, but hopefully you guys dug this. So I'm going to get on to my second share, technically my third if you count Lineham, but there's a band called Zan Clan. Z-A-N-C-L-A-N, Zan Clan. And this comes to us directly from a singer named Zinni Zan. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, it's probably because Zinni Zan was lead singer in Shotgun Messiah before Tim Skold kind of took it all over and just said, hey, I'm going to sing from here on out. So that first Shotgun Messiah record, which was a really great record, Zinni Zan was a singer in that. Zinni Zan left, Scandinavian-born Swedish kind of artist, went on and did some other things, but part of what he did was form the Zan Clan with a guitar player producer named Chris Laney. Now, Chris Laney has his own stuff out, and there's some pretty good stuff out there. It's L-A-N-E-Y. So check out Chris Laney. But Chris Laney is the guitar player and producer of Zan Clan. And the title drew me into this. When I saw the title, I was like, oh, this has to be good. So Zinni Zan from 2005, and the album is called We're Zan Clan, Who the Fuck Are You?
Nice. Nice, wholesome record.
You gotta love that, man. That is, what's more rock and roll than that, right?
No kidding.
Awesome. So I'm gonna play this tune called Go, Go, Go for you. Check it out.
I'm out of control.
So till today, I had not heard of that band. I listened to the song 5 minutes before we got on the air.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that guy sounds like the guy from Shotgun Messiah. So now that makes sense to me. I'm not exactly crazy. Because that's the only Shotgun Messiah album I have is the first one.
Yeah, that's Zenny Zan, the singer in the first version of Shotgun Messiah. And that whole record, the Zan Clan record, that whole record's really pretty good. So if you like that song, check out the record because you'll dig the record. But they put out two records. The second record, I don't know, sounds like demos, doesn't sound great. I think it's called Citizen of the Wasteland. Just go and get this first Zan Clan record and be happy with that.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, that's the story with Zenny Zan and Zan Clan. And like I said, you can go check out Chris Laney has some of his own stuff. I went and picked up one of his records and I thought it was really solid as well. Yeah, it's good stuff. I loved Shotgun Messiah. I loved the first record, but I also loved the second record after Zenny left. So
that's cool. Well, like you were talking about, you know, there's tons of people we could have talked about, tons of bands, tons of artists. Yep. Hell, there's what I would consider somewhat mainstream artists that don't get enough talked about. I'm in Vegas through Sunday and I'm talking to one of my friends and he's a rock guy, right? Younger kid though, probably in his early 30s. And I said, oh, so you like rock? He goes, oh yeah, yeah. You know, I really like Zeppelin, like some of the classic rock, et cetera, et cetera. Really likes Greta Van Fleet. Goes, oh, great, great, great. So I go, well, I'm doing this episode and I want to get an idea of like how deep does somebody's knowledge go? So like, ever heard of Mr. Big? Nope. Paul Gilbert? Nope. Rival Sons? Nope. Hailstorm? Nope. Y&T? Nope. Striper? Nope. XYZ? Nope. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stop now. So to me, those are mainstream bands and nobody knows them.
For sure. The Hailstorm.
Yeah, I know. It's a different world. Wow. It used to be when you went to high school and you started talking bands, everybody knew everybody who was on MTV.
Yeah.
It's just a different world.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Well, it's been good, but we got to get on out of here because we've shared plenty.
So, no, I just wanted to say to everybody, the listeners, just thanks for giving us a shot. Thanks for sticking in there with us. Thanks for all the feedback. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody listening. I've gotten a lot of good feedback just in personal messages, and some of the reviews that we've gotten have been super, super awesome from folks over at Podchaser. You guys have been going to Podchaser and rating the episodes and letting us know what you think and leaving us reviews. We always appreciate it when you guys leave us reviews. And believe me, we see them. So go on over to Podchaser. You can go to iTunes and leave us a review as well. We see those as well. They don't really have reviews on Facebook page anymore. What they call them, recommendations now, right?
Right.
Yeah. But listen, you guys can communicate with us through our Facebook page. You can communicate with us through, well, that's the way you can communicate two ways with us through our Facebook page. But if you guys just go to Podchaser and leave us a review or leave us a rating on the episode, we see those. We can't answer you, but we see them. And the same for the iTunes.
All right, folks. Until next week, we will talk to you later.
Yeah. You going to shuffle, rattle, and roll us out of here or what?
Oh, is it my turn?
I don't know.
I can do that.
All right. He's going to pick out his phone, shuffle, rattle, and roll us on out of here. Until next week, we will talk to you guys later. See ya.
See ya.
Get ready to shuffle, rattle, and roll. Play us out, boys.
Everyone's got a rock and roll story to tell, and we want to hear yours. So go to our website at growinguprock.com. That's one word, growinuprock.com. Or visit us on our Facebook page at Growing Up Rock and tell us all about it.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.